A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
The plastic smell was the thing. Not the metal, not the wood. I keep coming back to that because it's backwards from what every asthmatic assumes. And Daniel's field notes basically say the assumption is wrong.
And he's asking whether his experience tracks with what we know about the disease, which is a better question than most people ask. Most folks just accept the fear and never test it.
Right. Here's what Daniel wrote in. He took up engraving to mark his inventory, got tired of stickers peeling off, and went into it assuming that, as an asthmatic, anything involving drilling or engraving was off limits. He was careful with respiratory protection, sometimes less careful, and what he observed surprised him. He assumed metal, stainless steel, aluminum, would be the ultra-dangerous stuff. What actually triggered asthma events during the times he was less careful was engraving plastics, which throws up vapors. His point is that a lot of asthmatics, himself included, assume all dust and fine particles are the enemy. But if you ran an experiment, he suspects many people would be shocked. The thing they thought was the worst trigger barely registered, and the thing they thought was harmless, etching plastic, set off their asthma the next day. He says there's no equivalent of allergy testing for construction and DIY materials, so he wants to imagine a fictitious allergy bench. His personal bench would score cigarette smoke highest. Secondhand smoke is his worst trigger. But aluminum dust and wood dust, the exposures that kept him away from woodworking for years, would be vanishingly small. And he's clear this doesn't mean he should inhale large quantities or skip respiratory protection, but he's not extra sensitive to those materials the way he assumed. So the questions are, how do asthmatics figure out their own reactive substances in the realm of dust, and does his experience actually make sense within the context of the disease?
So today, we're building a hypothetical allergy bench for DIY dusts and vapors, and what Daniel's engraving bench taught him about his own airways.
And the first thing to say is that his experience isn't weird. It's not even unusual. It's what you'd expect once you separate the two categories everyone lumps together.
The core puzzle is why an asthmatic would react more to plastic vapors than to metal or wood dust. And the answer starts with a distinction most people never make. Inert particles versus chemical irritants. A piece of aluminum dust is a tiny solid. It can mechanically irritate, sure, but it's not doing chemistry with your airway lining. A vapor from heated plastic is a different animal. It's a gas, or close enough, and it's made of molecules that react with tissue.
So the allergy bench idea is actually the right frame. If you could test your airway reactivity to different materials, the way skin prick tests check for pollen, Daniel's bench would score cigarette smoke at the top, aluminum and wood dust near the bottom, and plastic vapor somewhere in the middle, probably higher than he expected.
And the episode has three parts. First, what plastic engraving actually releases and why it triggers asthma. Second, how an asthmatic can systematically identify their own triggers without a formal test. Third, what this means for the broader assumption that all dust is dangerous. That last part matters because the assumption isn't just wrong, it's costly. It kept Daniel away from woodworking for years.
So, let's start by unpacking what Daniel actually experienced, and why it might not be as surprising as it feels.
When you engrave plastic, especially acrylic, you're not just shaving off little curls, you're heating the material to the point where it breaks down. And what comes off is a cocktail. Methyl methacrylate, formaldehyde, benzene, styrene. Those are volatile organic compounds. VOCs. They're not particles floating around, they're vapors. And every one of them is a known respiratory irritant.
Methyl methacrylate. That's the one I'd put money on for Daniel's reaction. It's the monomer that acrylic is made from, and when you heat acrylic, you release some of it back into the air. It has a sharp, sweet, almost fruity smell, and it's a recognized occupational asthma trigger.
Nail salons are the example everyone knows now. Workers doing acrylic nails day after day, breathing methyl methacrylate, develop respiratory symptoms. Dental labs too, same chemical, same problem. There's a reason those industries have ventilation standards now. The chemical doesn't care whether it's a nail salon or a hobby bench in a garage.
And Daniel's doing this in his home, presumably with a Dremel or a small rotary tool, maybe a ventilation window open if he's lucky. The dose is lower than a nail salon, but the chemical is the same.
The mechanism is worth spelling out because it explains why the reaction is delayed. When you inhale methyl methacrylate, or formaldehyde, the vapor doesn't just sit on the surface of your airway. It dissolves into the epithelium, the lining of the airways, and starts irritating the nerve endings and the inflammatory cells directly. For an asthmatic, whose airways are already hyperreactive, that irritation triggers bronchoconstriction. The smooth muscle around the airways tightens. You get inflammation, increased mucus production, the whole cascade.
And the next day part. Daniel said the plastic engraving set off his asthma the next day. That tracks. The inflammatory response builds over hours. It's not always immediate. You finish the project, you feel fine, you go to bed, and at 3 a.m, your airways decide they've had enough.
Metal dust and wood dust are mostly particulate matter. Now, wood dust is a group 1 carcinogen. I've said that before, and it's still true, but that's a long-term cancer risk, not an acute asthma trigger. The particles are solid. They can mechanically irritate, and very fine particles can penetrate deep into the lungs, but they don't do the same chemical dance with the airway epithelium that a VOC does. The receptor pathways are different.
So, Daniel's experience, no reaction to aluminum or wood dust, reaction to plastic vapor, aligns with the distinction. His asthma is chemically sensitive, not particle sensitive.
And here's where the all dust is equally dangerous assumption falls apart. An asthmatic who fears any particulate is often afraid of the wrong thing. The visible sawdust cloud looks terrifying. The invisible vapor coming off a piece of heated plastic doesn't look like anything. No cloud, no warning. But the vapor is the one doing chemistry with your lungs.
It's the shark you can't see.
And the DIY world doesn't help. Safety data sheets for acrylic sheets will say use in ventilated area, which is about as useful as a label that says don't eat. Nobody tells you that heating this particular plastic releases a specific chemical that's a known asthma trigger.
Formaldehyde is the other one worth naming. It's a known airway irritant, and even low levels can trigger symptoms in sensitive people. It's in plywood, particle board, some adhesives, and it comes off when certain plastics degrade. Benzene and styrene, too. Styrene is what you smell when you cut fiberglass, that sweet chemical odor. None of these are things you want in your airways.
And the occupational literature is clear on methyl methacrylate and formaldehyde as asthma triggers. These are recognized hazards in industrial settings. But the hobbyist with a rotary tool and a piece of acrylic from the hardware store gets none of that context. The package says acrylic sheet, not this product releases methyl methacrylate when heated.
So the science says Daniel's experience makes sense. Plastic vapor is a chemical irritant, metal and wood dust are mostly mechanical irritants, and his asthma is more sensitive to the chemical side. Now, the bigger question is, how does an asthmatic figure out their own triggers without a formal test?
The short answer is, there's no skin prick test for methyl methacrylate. Standard allergy testing covers pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold, maybe some foods. It doesn't cover industrial chemicals or VOCs. There's no panel that says, here's your reactivity to acrylic vapor, here's your reactivity to pine dust, here's your reactivity to cigarette smoke. That test doesn't exist.
That's the gap Daniel pointed at. If you want to know whether epoxy resin bothers you, or polyurethane fumes, or the smell of hot PVC, nobody can run a test for that. You have to figure it out yourself.
The tool that actually exists is a peak flow meter. It's a little handheld device that measures how fast you could blow air out of your lungs. You take a reading before you start a project, then again during, then again after, maybe the next morning. If your peak flow drops by more than about 20%, that's a meaningful signal that something in the air is tightening your airways.
Daniel's prompt mentioned that he's had issues with pulse oximeters giving false reassurance during asthma attacks. A peak flow meter is different. It measures the mechanical function of your airways, not your blood oxygen. You can have a significant drop in peak flow while your oxygen saturation still looks fine. That's part of why peak flow is the right tool for this job.
The protocol is simple. Pick a material you want to test. Take a baseline peak flow reading. Work with the material for a set period, say 15 minutes, with whatever ventilation and protection you'd normally use. Take another reading right after. Take another one an hour later and one the next morning. Write down how you feel. Chest tightness, cough, wheeze, mucus. Do this a few times with the same material.
The key is one variable at a time. If you engrave acrylic on Tuesday and sand oak on Wednesday and your peak flow drops on Thursday, you don't know which one did it. You need to isolate the material.
A symptom diary helps too. Not just peak flow numbers, but the subjective stuff. How did your chest feel the next morning? Did you wake up coughing? Was there a smell that lingered in the room? Daniel noticed a plastic vapor specifically. That's a data point. The smell itself is information because the chemicals that smell are often the ones doing the irritating.
There's a controlled exposure trial approach, but I want to be careful here. You don't deliberately expose yourself to something you think is dangerous without protection. The idea is to test materials under normal working conditions, not to huff fumes as an experiment. If you suspect something is a trigger, you don't need to prove it by having an asthma attack.
Right. The goal is to identify triggers through normal use, with a respirator if you have one, and to notice patterns. If every time you work with acrylic, your peak flow drops the next morning, and every time you work with aluminum, it doesn't, you've learned something. You haven't done a clinical trial, but you've got a working hypothesis.
Daniel's personal bench is already doing this. Cigarette smoke at the top, that makes total sense. Secondhand smoke is a complex mix of particulates and chemical irritants. It's got thousands of compounds in it, many of them volatile, many of them directly irritating to airway epithelium. For someone with chemically sensitive asthma, it's the perfect storm.
His low reactivity to aluminum and wood dust suggests his asthma is driven more by chemical irritant receptors than by particle load. The TRP channels, the transient receptor potential channels in the airway, they respond to chemicals like the ones in cigarette smoke and plastic vapor. They don't respond the same way to inert aluminum particles.
His bench isn't just anecdote, it's a profile. Chemically sensitive, particle tolerant, and that profile has implications for what he should avoid and what he can do.
The respiratory protection point matters here, and Daniel made it himself. Just because aluminum dust doesn't trigger his asthma, doesn't mean it's safe to inhale. Metal dust is bad for everyone. Wood dust is a carcinogen for everyone. The respirator isn't just an asthma tool, it's a general health tool. The fact that his airways don't immediately spasm doesn't mean the particles aren't doing long-term damage.
That's the misconception to bust. If a material doesn't trigger an asthma attack, it's safe to inhale. No, it's not. The asthma reaction is one thing. The long-term damage is another. You can have no asthma symptoms at all, and still be accumulating silica or wood dust in your lungs.
The psychological side is worth naming. Daniel said the fear of dust kept him away from woodworking and DIY for years. That's a real cost. If you believe every sawdust cloud is an asthma attack waiting to happen, you avoid the workshop entirely. You miss out on the hobby, the satisfaction, the skill building. And for a lot of asthmatics, that fear is based on an assumption that was never tested.
Understanding your actual triggers is liberating. It turns a blanket prohibition into a specific, manageable set of precautions. Wear a respirator for the stuff that's generally harmful. Be extra careful with the stuff that's specifically harmful to you. And stop fearing the stuff that doesn't actually bother you.
There's a second-order question Daniel raised that I think is interesting. Could the asthma community benefit from a DIY trigger database? A place where people share their experiences with specific materials. I react to acrylic vapor, I don't react to pine dust, epoxy resin gives me a headache, that kind of thing.
The problem is that asthma is heterogeneous. Two people with the same diagnosis can have completely different trigger profiles. One person's acrylic vapor is another person's nothing. A database would be useful as a starting point, but it can't replace personal testing. You can't assume that because someone else reacts to something you will too.
But the database could help people know what to pay attention to. If 50 people report that epoxy resin fumes triggered their asthma, and you're about to work with epoxy for the first time, you know to be extra careful. It's not a substitute for self-monitoring, but it's a signal.
The absence of formal testing is the real gap. Allergy testing has been around for decades, and it covers the things that make you sneeze in spring. But there's no equivalent for the chemical soup of a hardware store. Nobody has built the test that would tell you, here's your reactivity to the 20 most common DIY fumes.
Part of the reason is that the chemical exposures are harder to standardize. A skin prick test uses a purified protein. A DIY material is a complex mixture. Acrylic from one manufacturer releases slightly different compounds than acrylic from another. The dose varies with temperature, tool speed, ventilation. It's a messier problem.
Self-experimentation, careful, controlled, with a peak flow meter and a diary, is the only route most people have, and Daniel's already doing it. His field notes are exactly the kind of data that would go into that hypothetical database.
Now that we know the science, the bigger question is, how can asthmatics figure out their own triggers? And the answer we've landed on is, slowly, systematically, with a peak flow meter and a notebook.
The peak flow meter is the key instrument. It's cheap, it's simple, and it gives you a number instead of a feeling. Feelings lie. You can feel fine while your airways are narrowing. The number doesn't lie.
The timing matters. The delayed reaction Daniel described, symptoms the next day, means you can't just take a reading right after exposure and conclude you're fine. You need the morning reading. The inflammatory response builds overnight.
The protocol is baseline. Immediate post-exposure, 1 hour next morning. 4 data points per material. Repeated a few times. That's a real data set.
The diary captures what the numbers miss. The quality of the cough, the sensation of tightness, the smell that lingered. All of that's diagnostic information.
Daniel's cautionary note about not skipping a respirator is crucial. Even if certain dusts don't trigger his asthma, they're still harmful to everyone. The protection is about general health, not just asthma. I said this before, but it bears repeating because it's the thing people get wrong.
The knock-on effect, the psychological one, is the thing I keep thinking about. The fear of all dust can prevent asthmatics from engaging in hobbies and DIY. That's a real loss. Understanding your actual triggers can be liberating. It changes the question from, can I do this at all, to, what precautions do I need for this specific material?
The open question Daniel posed, could the asthma community benefit from a DIY trigger database, is worth sitting with. Given the lack of formal testing, a community-driven approach might be the only way to fill the gap. It's imperfect, but it's better than nothing.
I worked a summer at a plastics fabrication shop, early 2000s. We engraved acrylic nameplates for office doors. The laser cutter had this smell, sweet and sharp, like nail polish remover, but worse. The owner never wore a mask. He said it was just plastic. There was a guy who worked the engraving station, Terry. After a few months, he had this cough that wouldn't go away. The owner said it was allergies. Terry said he never had allergies before. He'd go home and cough all night. The shop had one window. I brought in a box fan once, pointed it at the engraving station to blow the fumes out. The owner made me take it down because it blew paperwork around, so we just worked in it. I never had asthma. But I remember the plastic smell was always stronger than anything from the metalwork. The metal shavings just fell on the floor. The plastic smell hung in the air for an hour.
The methyl methacrylate. Terry's cough was probably exactly that. Chronic low-level exposure to a known respiratory irritant dismissed as allergies by someone who didn't want to deal with ventilation.
The box fan detail. The owner cared more about paperwork than about the air his employees were breathing. That's not unusual in small shops. Ventilation costs money, and it's invisible, so it's the first thing skipped.
The fan was $12. The paperwork was a stack of invoices. He could have put a paperweight on them.
That's the thing about DIY and small shop settings. The ventilation is often just an open window, or nothing. The respiratory protection is whatever the person decides to wear. Nobody's enforcing anything.
Which makes the self-knowledge piece even more important. If nobody's going to tell you what's in the air, you have to figure it out yourself.
Terry quit after the summer. I don't know what happened to him, but I think about that smell every time I see an acrylic sign.
The open question from all of this is how asthmatics can safely explore their own triggers without risking severe reactions. The peak flow protocol helps, but it's not a guarantee. There's always a risk that a material is more reactive than expected.
The labeling question. Should DIY stores label materials with respiratory hazard information beyond just use in ventilated area? That phrase is on everything and it means nothing. A real label would say, heating this material releases methyl methacrylate, a known asthma trigger.
The community-driven approach might be the practical answer. If formal testing doesn't exist and labels are useless, then shared experience is what's left. Imperfect, but it's something.
Daniel's story challenges the assumption that all dust is the enemy. The real enemy might be the invisible vapor. and knowing that could open up a world of DIY for asthmatics who've been avoiding it out of fear.
Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flemingtop for keeping the show running.
This has been My Weird Props, the Human AI Collaboration Podcast.
If you want to reach us, email us at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.